Manuel, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Glenn. I'm excited for this.
Yes, excited to have you on, and we appreciate all your knowledge and all the work that you do covering both the Bundesliga and Major League Soccer. But the first thing I want to say, because before we came on, we were talking about the way you got home from covering the Vancouver Sporting Kansas City game, float plane. Not everybody has the exotic lifestyle you do, so take us through that a little bit.
Yeah, I guess so. Like, we live on the West Coast, right? I live on Vancouver Island in Victoria, which is the capital of British Columbia, and it's about 70 miles from Vancouver. It's the biggest city in British Columbia, and the two cities are separated by water. So you either take a ferry, which takes you with driving and everything about three and a half hours, or you could take a float plane, which takes 20 minutes. So downtown to downtown, and I had the opportunity to pick up a couple cheap flights. So yeah, I took the float plane. It's people always say like, oh, you take the float plane. It's pretty normal around here. But I guess if you're don't live on the West Coast, you're not used to it.
Yeah, I think it's exciting. It puts a nice twist to it. It puts a nice romanticism into covering the Whitecaps if you're grabbing your bag and jumping on a float plane. So pretty cool. All right, so let's before we get into some talk about Vancouver, who did, by the way, have a huge win last night against Sporting Kansas City. You were at that game. Let's talk about the Bayern Munich Bayer Leverkusen game. I mean, this thing was over after about 30, 35 minutes. Ends up 5-1 at Leverkusen. It was the biggest game of the weekend in the Bundesliga, as both teams were 2-3. Some initial impressions from you on that game.
Yeah, I think a little bit frustrated, to be honest with you, because I've just come back from Munich. I was there to cover Bayern Munich, a few of their games, and you know, I've been covering Bayern Munich for the last 5-6 years pretty closely. And you know, they are a very, very good team. They're probably the best club side in Europe with the players that they have, but they have also dominated this league for so very long, right? And if everything goes normal, they're probably going to win their 10th title in a row. But everyone following the Bundesliga is hoping that someone is going to finally challenge them. And Leverkusen had such an exciting start to the season with a new coach, with lots of young players, play a very, very nice brand of football. And they just got absolutely destroyed yesterday. And I mean, in fairness, their two best defensive midfielders were out for this. And if you still play an attacking brand of football with your two anchors missing, I guess that's the result. But at the same time, look, it was 1-0 after 3 minutes, and then they added four goals between the 30th and the 37th minute, and the game was essentially done, right? And that's not good for the league, because that's what they branded as the biggest match of that particular match day, right? And it's 37 minutes in, and you can essentially turn off the television. And I can see that, especially if you're neutral and this is the first time you tune in on the league. And I love the Bundesliga. I've covered it, and I think it gets bad rap because Bayern is so dominant, but this doesn't help.
Manuel Feig joining us, Transfer Market, covers Major League Soccer and the Bundesliga. All right, so back to that to that point, and let's just specifically talk about Leverkusen. Were they in fear? Were they in too much awe of Bayern Munich? Does that happen? I mean, it does happen often in the Bundesliga, right? I mean, it's such a machine that people are down 1-0 before the game even starts.
Yeah, I think actually, you know what? I think the problem here was almost the opposite, that they did not show enough respect, or that Gerardo Sione, the new head coach, I think he got a little bit of a reality check, because 2 weeks ago, before the international break, Eintracht Frankfurt did beat Bayern Munich 2-1 at the Allianz Arena, right? It was a historic win for them, because it's been, I think, 2 decades since Frankfurt has beaten Bayern in Munich. And they were very well defensively organized, 3-5-2, you know, relied on a very good goalkeeping performance, but that's what you need against the top sides. That's just how it is, right? That's a reality, but just very disciplined and hit Bayern Munich from a very well organized defense on counter attacks. That's how they got their two goals. Bayer Leverkusen made the mistake of thinking, okay, well, our two best central midfielders are out. Let's just put two attacking players into those two positions in Amiri and Demi Bay, and just try to play with them. And the thing is, if you play with Bayern, if you go try to go toe to toe with them attacking wise, And you see this all the time in the Champions League when the English teams come to Munich, right, and just get absolutely smashed because they're like, oh, we're an English team. We can beat them playing their rules. It just doesn't work that way. And I think this was what had happened for Leverkusen. I thought they were thinking they could go toe-to-toe with this team. And obviously, they couldn't. And I think in the second half, they realized, okay, well, they brought in the defensive players. They shored up their defense. Of course, Bayern took the foot off the pedal because they're playing Benfica midweek. But I think their problem was actually almost the opposite, that they did not show the necessary respect for Bayern Munich and what they can do. And I think maybe for Simeone, first year in a top five league, a little bit of a learning experience.
Yeah, so then you have to say the coach personnel-wise may have gotten it wrong, right?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't help. Andrich was injured. Palacios is injured, right? And like that's two key defensive midfielders they were just missing. I guess you could blame him for not changing the tactics, you know, moving personnel around, saying, okay, well, two of my most important players are missing, so maybe I should change the tactical formation here. But I think he got his lineup wrong. And, you know, by the time you realize they got it wrong, it was 5-0.
Yeah, when you're going up against the likes of Leon Goretzka, Joshua Kimmich, yeah. Sané, Müller, I mean, I'm just looking at the second half and who's coming on for Bayern Munich? Marcel Sabitzer, Kingsley Coman, and Jamal Musiala. I mean, it's just like you're looking at this and you're going, oh, okay. Yeah, okay, we're competing with this, right? I mean, the depth that they have is pretty remarkable. Just speak to that a little bit. And again, that goes back to your question about the league and their dominance in the league, and this is why it will never be considered as good as the Premier League from a competitive standpoint.
I think the competitive standpoint is there. It's just unfortunate that Bayern are in this league and not another league, because I do actually think that with the squad that they have and the structure that they have put in place over the last 30, 40 years, you know, this was not handed to them. They did this on their own merit. It's not, they don't have an oligarch owner or some sheikh from the Middle East that just come in and handed them billions and billions of dollars. You know, they had to build this themselves. They make very few mistakes when it comes to this squad planning and the way they put players, teams together, because every time you think, okay, well, now they're going through a transition. They lost Franck Ribéry and Arjen Robben. Now we're going to hurt them. And then they bring in new players that they find for very little money. Serge Gnabry is a good example. Kingsley Coman is a great example. Yes, they spend a bit more on Leroy Sané for sure, but Jamal Musiala, they signed for free from Chelsea's academy, right? And they find these players and they develop them. Joshua Kimmich as well, you know, Leon Goretzka, that's probably the best central midfield pairing in the world. Those two players were signed for $8 million and on free transfer. You know, like that kind of team, other teams in the world spend over $1 billion on a team like that, and they do it with very little money. So this is a club that makes very few mistakes, and that's frustrating for everyone else in the league because of the Champions League money that they earn, like continuously being a Champions League, the gap is just very wide financially, right? So not only do they not make mistakes, but they can also just outpay a lot of their rivals. And that is on the one hand frustrating, but on the other hand, they earned it, right? And that's they earned it with their own merit. I personally don't know how you can close that financial gap to them.
That's the one thing that's difficult to close, but you can observe them, and you have to say that there's so many things that they do better than others. You know, whether it's talent assessment, whether it's identifying, diamonds in the rough, whatever it is, the way they set their academies up and things like that, whatever it is, you're right. You do have to give them credit. By the way, Lewandowski had two goals. Gnabry had two. Thomas Müller had one. It was 5-0 at halftime. That was a record on the road for Bayern Munich, and they were like a hot knife to butter running through Leverkusen. But as Manuel Fate said, Leverkusen without two of their better holding midfielders. All right, let me take you to Dortmund and Dortmund's threat to Bayern this year. Erling Haaland back, had a couple in a 3-1 win over Mainz. How about a thought on them?
Yeah, you know what? I thought they were very good against Mainz. They, up 2-0 very quickly and then really held that result until, you know, typical Dortmund fashion, you always feel like they're going to concede at least one. And that's been something that's been happening for quite some time now. I think what's different this year, though, under Rose, the new head coach, and this, you know, this is, I find, different to what happened in the last few years under Favre, is they don't seem to collapse when they concede a goal, or even, you know, if the opponent goes and draws level to them. They always seem to find then a late goal or a way to just see out the result. And the game against Mainz was a perfect example. They conceded late and then they just added a third. Bellingham winning the ball deep and finding Haaland. You know, if Haaland shows up in front of a goalkeeper, that's a goal. That's just the reality of it. But I actually, you know, they were without Haaland for the last few weeks, and I thought they were still quite good. Marco Reus has been excellent for several weeks now. Jude Bellingham, I think we underestimate how important he has become for this team. I think he's still 17, right? So there's a lot of very good pieces in that club.
How about Gio Reyna? Because a lot of people, with him being a U.S. international, a lot of Austin listeners.
Right.
What about some thoughts on Gio Reyna, with his dad being the head of Austin FC on the sporting end?
Yeah, of course. I mean, Gio is a great player, right? Unfortunately, he's injured. And today, I mean, it seems like that he's going to unfortunately also miss the international games in November. But he's become a very important player for this club very quickly at a very young age. And I think this is what Dortmund do well, right? They find these kids and develop them and give them an opportunity to shine. And
what is unique about the way that they handle those young players? Because he really burst onto the scene. First of all, we do know they give opportunity. And again, we're talking to Manuel Fate of Transfer Market. You know, take us a little deeper into what you see that Dortmund does with these very young players.
I think it's just an opportunity to play. But not just an opportunity to play, but also to play. And I thank God fans are back, right? But to play in one of the biggest stages in the world football. You know, the Signal Iduna Park is a magnificent stadium. And if you learn how to play there, you'll be able to play anywhere. And I think they give them that opportunity. But look, I went to their training facilities a couple of years ago, got a tour of it, spoke to their youth coaches. And the work that they do there is just outstanding, right? It's just an amazing facility. Everything is close in Dortmund. You can go from the stadium to the training facility. It's all slow, like close distances. And I think it's also a city that just lives and breathes football. You drive to downtown Dortmund, you see the signs, you know, Dortmund signs everywhere. It's black and yellow through and through. And I think as a player, as a young player, when you go there and you internalize that sets you up for a career, right? So it's like the playing is one thing, the development, the youth infrastructure that they have, the coaching that they have there, but also just the fact that this is a city that lives and breathes football, which then, of course, you know, it doesn't, when you go somewhere else, you're unfazed by the obstacles that will be put in your way there.
Talking to Manuel Fate of Transfer Market, by the way, I called a U.S.-Germany game there once, and it remains one of the just greatest environments that I've ever called a game in. And it was freezing cold and it was packed and it just, people were jubilant, happy, just loving the sport, as passionate as anybody. Real quick, give me a word on the Vancouver Whitecaps. And do you think if Vanni Sartini gets his team in the playoffs, do you think he gets to be the head coach of the Vancouver Whitecaps next year?
I think he should get a shot at becoming the head coach of the Vancouver Whitecaps. Look, he's done an amazing job. I like his personality. He has quite a good background as well in coaching. I think people underestimate that. And he was brought in to help develop the club's like youth infrastructure and so on, right? He's a very good thinker of the game. And, you know, they're only 1 point out at the moment, thanks to that win yesterday against Sporting Kansas City. You know, second best team in Western Conference at the moment, and I don't think many people expected them to win it. But it wasn't pretty. I'm not going to lie to you, Glenn. I'm going to have those points of that game where I just thought, this is not good football. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It was not good football. But sometimes you have to drag the opponent down to your level, right? And it's just that. And fair enough. I think in the end of the day, no one cares how you get the 3 points, as long as you get the 3 points. And it was a must-win game for them because of all the results that came in on Friday, on Saturday. Everyone else around them won, so they had to win this game. And yeah, I think they set themselves nicely up to have a shot at the playoffs.